Hello, and welcome back to Texas Tech Health Check from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. I'm your host, Melissa Whitfield. We want you to get healthy and stay healthy with help from evidence-based advice from our physicians, healthcare providers, and researchers. Our topic for this episode is eating disorders, the different types, and dispelling some myths about them as well. For example, did you know that with comprehensive treatment, most children and teenagers can recover from an eating disorder? Our guest is Dr. Rosa Gomez de Jesus, pediatrician with Texas Tech Physicians and associate professor in the School of Medicine. Dr. Gomez goes over the different kinds of eating disorders, warning signs we should look for, how to get treatment, and advice on what parents and caregivers can do to support their children. Dr. Gomez, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much. Very glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do at the Health Sciences Center, and your expertise?
Yes, so I am a pediatrician who subspecialized in adolescent medicine. So the majority of the patients I've seen are referred to me for specific concerns. One of them, the one that we're going to discuss today, which is the eating disorder. I also am a certified eating disorder specialist, and that's with the International Association of Eating Disorder Providers. So this is something I really enjoy doing for sure.
Well, I'm very excited that we're able to talk about eating disorders because especially with the holidays coming up, and I think there's a lot of time and space to have these conversations. So if you could just explain to us, what is an eating disorder and what are the different types and how prevalent is it in children and adolescents, of course, and there's always been that myth that it's more common in girls than in boys. Mm-hmm.
So an eating disorder is very important to make sure that we understand it's a psychiatric disorder. So there are specific criteria that needs to be met for each of them. And it does have a lot of the medical complications that come with it. And that's a little bit more where I play a role, but I also help coordinate the full care. So what happens with eating disorders, I feel like sometimes we only think about anorexia or bulimia, and that's it. But there are many different kinds of eating disorders. We do have the anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, but we also have like atypical cases where there's atypical anorexia nervosa that you have everything except for maybe the weight component, or you have atypical bulimia. You also have binge eating disorder that is newer as well. And then avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. And this one is interesting because it has nothing to do with body image. So you still can have an eating disorder and it not related necessarily with body image. However, in something like anorexia nervosa, it's all about how the patient sees itself. So many parents say, but why my kid is doing this is because it's not your kid. It's that disorder making that dysfunctional thinking about themselves. So each one of them are going to have different criteria that they can meet. And then that's how we then treat accordingly. When we have a restrictive, so if one of the behaviors is restrictive eating, that's when the underweight comes into play. And then many, many of the medical complications come with that, and they can be life-threatening, like people die with this. So it's so important to identify it. In terms of how prevalent, I think like is so understudied in some ways that I feel is a lot more prevalent of what we think. In a matter of years, I have gone from teaching that is less than 1%, for example, anorexia nervosa, to 4%. So it's quite common. I think here, I've been here for 4 years, and I've been surprised in how many patients we identify with this. So it's quite common. When it comes to males, I think that's another stereotype that we have, that they don't have eating disorders, and it's so dangerous to believe in that way because they do get eating disorders, all of them, any of them. So in terms of statistics, about 20 million of females in the United States have eating disorders, about 10 million of males, and a big percentage of those are going to be during adolescence or young adults. in terms of the males, the other distinction I want to make is, like, some people think, you know, because we know that LGBT community does have a higher risk when it comes to eating disorders. Some people may believe that only males who are homosexual might be the ones that have eating disorders, but the majority of the males who have eating disorders are heterosexual. So again, it's very important not to, like, believe everything that is out there. More if you see symptoms and you see you have any concern, then to try to look for support and see if in reality this might be an eating disorder.
How does an eating disorder affect their health? You mentioned being underweight, but also their health, not only physical, but mental, and can it be fatal?
Yes. So this is something that I feel I repeat very often, especially with my trainees, and is that an eating disorder is not just about weight. I feel like in the old generation, it was all about BMI, like a number. But this is really about behaviors. It's really about what you think about yourself and how you're feeling with yourself. In terms of health, obviously, it can be quite affected. If we're going to talk just about the behaviors, like, let's say, binge eating disorder, or like binge eating or purging behaviors, where they can be vomiting or they might be over-exercising. I have patients that will exercise 4 hours a day, nonstop. So obviously, all of those things are going to affect the body. Pretty much every single organ system in your body can be affected by an eating disorder and poor nutrition. And it doesn't matter what weight you are, you still can be poor nourished. Like, you can be malnourished. So it's many, many different areas of the body. When we're talking about restriction, though, and weight loss, that gets a little bit more significant, the concerns, because the patient can get to a point where they're medically unstable, meaning the heart is beating very low. I have patients, normal heart rate will be like 80, 90, and I have patients with 29, 28 on heart rates. Obviously, the blood pressures, the cell lines, like everything can go low. Usually, these patients are going to be complaining of headaches. They're going to be complaining of feeling dizzy. They might have syncopal episodes, like fainting episodes. They feel very tired and very weak as well. They might want to lose weight because they want to be better in sports, but then they have a hard time doing the sport because they just don't have energy. So overall, yes, it's going to affect very profoundly the body. And anorexia nervosa, for example, when we're talking about restricting type and that they're low weight, these patients, especially females where the studies are a little bit more on, they're 12 times more likely to die than the regular population. And there's newer studies because males are so understudied. In 2020, 2021, newer studies shows that most likely is even more in terms of mortality in males than females. It's just they're very understudied. So yes, this is something that's not just a food issue. This is a whole situation where, yes, psych, emotion, body is being hurt. And without support, without treatment, yes, it can be life-threatening and it's something that is just not going to resolve by its own. Needs treatment.
And with the mental aspect, is this something that they're obsessed with or that's something that they think about constantly?
Yes. So usually when we have the patient, especially when it's the eating disorders that go more with the body image, so bulimia or anorexia nervosa, they're just going to be thinking all the time. Like, that's one of the questions I ask. It's like, how much of your time is spent thinking about this? And usually the answer is all the time. Usually parents or patients might come to my clinic that are not concerned about eating disorders, but we start talking and then it results to be because they might come with depression, anxiety, but might be all from it. So comorbidities in an eating disorder are very common. What is first? Are we talking about they're not eating because they're so anxious that they cannot eat? Or are we talking about actually anorexia nervosa? So that's where my job comes into play try to identify where the issues are. But any circumstance where teenagers start changing the way they were eating or changing how they talk about themselves and they start looking at themselves and making more comments, oh, the weight goes up and down, or should be investigated. It should not just be left alone. I know teenagers are teenagers, and we all obviously at some point are going to be concerned about how we look. The problem is when it's so much, as you may mention, that is constant all the time. That's what is the center of what they're thinking. And then everything becomes like a second to that. So that's when we need to be obviously concerned.
How do children and adolescents learn about quote-unquote dieting, and what are the risk factors with that?
So dieting is actually one of the biggest risks for eating disorders. Dieting, how they learn about this, I think everywhere. We're talking about movies, we're talking about family, social media now is like really, really playing a role here, because the moment you look at something, then it's going to continue sending you things about the same thing. So they're going to be looking at this like make-believe kind of images. Like our society, we have this ideal of thinness. You know, everybody needs to be a certain way, which is not right. And we cannot like say weight is related to health. And I think that's the other problem. You need to be this way to be healthy. No. So I feel like it's from everywhere, like school, like everywhere, they're getting these messages. And this is where education and discussion at home plays such a big role. Sometimes as families, they are trying to be nice. And culturally, some families might be like, oh, saying little things that they don't think it mean a lot.
Yes.
But for many of these kids, yes, it's going to mean a lot. And it's almost feeling like they're being bullied at home. So it's very important for us as parents to kind of be careful with how we're saying things. And if we notice something, to make sure that we explore further. But conversations, I think, is the best way to start with any teenager with any kind of problem. Conversations early on.
Yes, I remember as a child in my family, I was la gordita.
They love to say all these little nicknames, thinking that is cute, but
right.
At the end, again, it's maybe not that cute. So, yeah, I think it's very important. I have many, many patients, obviously, where these cultural kind of ways are there. And it's a big discussion I need to have with parents when it comes to that, because we need to be careful.
Absolutely. So how are eating disorders treated? And can someone be cured, or is it something that they have to manage long term?
So actually, eating disorders, you can recover, like you can get cured, but you need to be treated. That's for sure. So treatment usually is multidiscipline. Like it needs to be usually a doctor. They're usually also a counselor. Most of the time, we want to have a family counselor as well, and then also a dietitian. And all of this is very important. In our case here, like sometimes get very difficult because not all services are necessarily available. And I might find myself trying to do everything, and that's not enough. So I try my best whenever I see my patients to try to give like all, I constantly checking what counselors are there, what dietitians are there, what insurance they do. Mostly some of these providers don't accept insurances. So again, it's difficult to find the care, but it's out there. And then it's about making a balance, like what is the priority here? Like to treat this now and prevent and make sure that this kid is successful, or like just let it be because it's something that is not a priority, not even knowing how much this is going to affect this future young adult in the future, right?
If they make it to adulthood.
Exactly. Because actually I was talking with in some of the lectures I've been at, and these are providers who treat adults. And we're talking about moms of four kids who are like late 30s, early 40s dying of anorexia, you know. So this happens. And if we don't treat it, they're not going to get better. They're going to carry this on. But yes, if we treat right away for providers, my main thing when I'm educating them is early recognition. You cannot dismiss this. You cannot just like oh, it's okay. This is so important. And even if it's just, I think maybe, let's just make sure it's not it. Even a little body image concern, let's just explore and make sure that it's not more than that. More often, I have patients who come and the parents say, oh, this is just happening for 6 months. The behaviors are happening for 6 months. The thoughts are being happening for a long time. So I think it's very important to always be in the loop, making sure that we're doing this the right way and identifying these patients as soon as we can.
So then how can families and caregivers and friends support someone with an eating disorder, especially with the holidays coming up?
Yes. So I wanted to mention also in terms of the treatment, for my part, the other thing that's very important, making sure the patient is stable or not medically. Because if they're unstable, then that's another step. It's the medical stabilization that is just that, making sure they're stable and then going to the other treatment. There's also higher level of cares, virtually and in person, that will be able to support the parents and the kid the whole way. We're talking about intensive therapy, and they will hopefully be with the family as needed. Now, when it comes to how parents can support their kids, besides being there, loving their kids, it's very important that they learn to listen. Not very often we like to hear the answers of our questions as parents. So it's very important to be aware and to always keep open the possibility. When a family is in denial, care is a lot harder. I feel like sometimes as parents, it's easier for us to think and find an answer on something physical than something psychological or psychiatric. So I feel like every time I'm discussing eating disorders with a family, it becomes very complex. And this is not about pointing fingers or trying to figure who did what or not. This is a condition that is not just affecting this teenager, but the whole family. So it's very important that all are in the same page and that we all want to do what is best for this kid. I have many patients like who have needed to return from college because they cannot. The school sends them back. This can really be effective. So parents is in the lookout. If they feel there's something that they're concerned about, discuss it with their doctors. And even like going online looking for counselors or like, because that can be very well the first stop. You know, try to find someone who can talk with them. But if in doubt, always trying to get their doctors to be aware of what the situation is. There are books that are very good for parents to try to learn a little bit more. Now we have internet everywhere, so you can very well go online and educate yourself a little bit more about how these disorders are. If there's other conditions like depression, anxiety, learn about those too. It's very hard being a teenager today. Like, to me, I feel like middle schools are scary. The high schools are very tough. So all of these things are out there. So it's about hopefully having that open communication, educating yourself in terms of these things and looking for the support, trying to make aware your doctor or somebody about your concerns as a parent. In the holiday, yes, it becomes difficult. Because obviously there's a lot of gatherings, there's a lot of people. Some of the things these patients actually do, that is one of the symptoms, is they isolate. So suddenly putting them in front of everyone with all of this food in front of them can be difficult. So listening to your kid, you know, discussing it, if you're already concerned, like how you're going to approach it, like have a plan of action. If it's a patient who already is in treatment, making sure the counselor, the dietitian give you tips on how to deal with it. But also if you feel if in benefit of your kid not to maybe have a big gathering, then keep that in consideration too. So again, it's all about the discussion of it, hopefully opening the conversation and then trying to together figure out what will be the best way to deal with it, because it will be hard.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Other than to be in the lookout, you know, we want what is best for our kids. So sometimes, again, we might not want bad things to happen to them, but they might be happening. So it's important to address them. And anyone can have an eating disorder. Anyone. It's not just this or that. It's anyone. So if you are concerned, like, trust yourself on that concern and look for help and support.
Well, thank you again for coming on our podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad to. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Texas Tech Health Check. Make sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. This information is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek immediate medical advice from your physician or your healthcare provider for questions regarding your health or medical condition. Texas Tech Health Check is brought to you by Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and produced by Tierra Castillo, Susanna Cisneros, Mark Hendricks, Kay Williams, Tyler White, and me, Melissa Whitfield.